Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we get to sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players and related music industry experts. If you love playing guitar, stick around. You're in the right place. Hey, everybody. This is Craig Garber from Everyone Loves Guitar. I'm here with Andrew Galecki today. He is a Nashville-based singer, songwriter, guitarist. He moved to Nashville in 2010 to attend Belmont, and he graduated with a degree in commercial music in 2014, and he also won the Belmont University School of Music's Commercial Showcase in 2014. Shortly after graduating, he released his debut EP called Day 2. In January of 2017, he premiered his single, Time to Change, on MTV's Teen Mom 2, and shortly after that, he released his next EP, You Won't Go It Alone. His most recent single is called I Know the Way Home, and it's already been streamed over 500,000 times on Spotify, and was recently placed on Spotify's Viral Hits playlist, including the number 2 slot on the Folk and Pop playlist, the number 2 slot on Fresh Folk. It's a really pretty folk song. It's got very good production and really clean mastering. I enjoyed listening to it. He also works as a touring guitarist for a few local artists, as well as doing remote session work from home as a vocalist and guitarist. He also runs a few businesses and podcasts. He hosts the Middle Class Musician podcast, where he interviews music professionals about making a living in the modern day music industry. He runs Nashville for Hire, which is an online tool for buying of remote sessions and songwriting from Nashville musicians and music industry professionals. And he also hosts another podcast called Musician Builds a Business, which is really, he's sharing the ups and downs on a documentary basis of building his Nashville for Hire business, which I think is a clever idea. Hey man, thank you for coming. I know you're a busy guy. I appreciate your time.
Oh, I appreciate being on. I feel stressed just from hearing all the things I'm supposedly doing.
No, it's really good stuff, man. Quick question for you. Your last single, I Know the Way Home, it sounds great. And I was curious who, like, did you do the engineering or who was involved in the engineering and the mastering? Because it was really clean, man.
Oh, I appreciate that. I'm happy to hear that. It was actually kind of a unique way of doing the song. We came at it a few months back. A company I work for called Sordid Noise does a lot of TV and film work, and so they had a specific commercial that was we were trying to nail down and kind of audition for. So we did about half the track at that point and wrote it specifically pointed towards what they needed for that commercial, and just did like a minute and a half first chorus kind of rendition of it, and because it was a commercial and kind of a tight schedule, it was like we had to do it all over the weekend. So I ended up just working from my little home studio and doing like the basic acoustic guitar and my vocals from there, and doing that kind of layered vocal thing that we did on there. And so we did that, and it kind of sat for a few weeks, that commercial. I'm not picking it up, but we liked the song, so we ended up finishing it up and basically did it the same format. I did a lot of the tracking of the acoustic guitar, electric guitar, vocals, and all that from my home setup, and just kind of layered things on. And we wanted it to kind of sit in a stay in like a mellow place. It would have been easy for it to become like a buildy kind of Coldplay song at the end. And we kind of wanted it to just stay in a similar spot. So the trick was really like not adding too much and just adding just enough where it goes somewhere, but not, you know, anywhere crazy. So we did that. And then I went over to the guy, one of the guys that works with Sordid Noise and does their mixing and mastering. And we kind of, him and I sat down and tweaked it until we felt good with it. And he kind of handled the nitpicky side of all the mixing and the mastering and made it all sound better than it would have.
Yeah, it's great. But you know what? As I've asked you that, I realized this is not your first rodeo. I mean, far from it. You got 2 EPs out already. So,
yeah,
you know, it's generally like I'll listen when I interview people, musicians, oftentimes I'll try to go through their whole catalog to see, you know, to get familiar with it because it tells a story, right?
Yeah, sure.
And usually like the first 3 or 4 albums that anybody does, there's a cutoff line. And after that, it's just dramatically different.
Right.
And I guess your cutoff line, I didn't listen to your first 2 EPs, to be honest with you, but your cutoff line, you must have passed it already because this is really clean and nice. And
I appreciate that.
I hope you do well with it.
Yeah, it's been the cutoff line probably would have been it probably would have been in high school with when I had a different band and we had a different name, and none of those things come up when you search my name now. I've been lucky that the first album I did with a hand in hand with another producer, and then I've kind of worked my own producing craft along the way. So now it becomes more of a collaboration when I work with people, and I happen to be. And I'm fortunate enough to be around people who are really good at what they do. So hopefully that cutoff line happened back in the end of high school. I'd like to think.
I hear you, man. What are you working on now that you're kind of most excited about? You got a lot of irons in the fire.
Yeah. So musically right now, it's kind of it's in a spot where I've been fortunate since that company I've been working with, Sort of Noise. I've been with them for about 2.5 years. I actually interned with them back in college, and then kind of worked my way through from being just interning and doing kind of just stuff around the studio, like, and by stuff I mean like errands basically, and kind of working my way into then being a part-time, you know, worker for them, just on like helping manage their catalog, metadata, all that fun quote unquote stuff. And then ended up becoming an artist with them after I did my EP. And so it's been a very slow burn process. And so I didn't really have much success sync wise until back in January. I had my first actual like TV sync on MTV with that Time to Change song. And then since then, it's kind of been a little bit of momentum, and I've gotten 4 or 5 of them lined up in the last few months. And so I've been very excited by the fact that I've just been able to actually make some money from my artist side of things. Right now I'm excited because I've got, I just had a song, this, the I Know the Way Home song was on, what's it called? A commercial for, I'm totally blanking on the name. Rogers Wireless.
Very cool. That's up in Canada.
Yeah. And I actually hadn't heard of them, but I looked them up, and it's like one of the, you know, three major wireless companies up there, which I was pumped. And so because of that, I've got a little bit more money coming in from my artist stuff than I would usually. So what I'm excited about right now is just having a little bit of a cushion financially from my artist stuff that I can then actually put more time into doing my recording and some of my like just basic branding for my artist stuff that I just haven't had the time or the money to be able to like put that effort in. So I'm excited now that I'll have a little bit of a cushion financially from that to be able to actually spend the time I want to be spending recording and then doing some basic promo stuff that I've been meaning to do for a long time but just haven't had the ability to.
That's awesome, man. Congratulations. That's a nice,
appreciate it. Nice
spot to be in.
For,
you know, like I say, for a change based on what you said, it's building a business. And I just did a podcast episode where I talked about how similar, you know, playing guitar professionally is to running any entrepreneurial business. It's a trajectory, and you know, this is part of it, like exactly what you said. Like I worked as an intern basically, you know, taking out the trash or doing whatever.
Right.
And then I did manage their catalog, and you know, it's like nobody really thinks or is aware of that. You know, people think and they see a band or an artist and say, wow, he or she's an overnight sensation, but
right,
you know, they don't know how many nights they were in a cold van in Tacoma, Washington or something in the middle of the winter, so or doing the stuff you did for free. So
it's a definite building effect. And I think if there's code or like a baseline to the way I see the world and approach it now, it's book I read, The Compound Effect, and I'm blanking on that.
Yeah. I read that book. It's a really good book. Yeah.
It really, and there's a couple in that space that basically say the same things book wise, but that book specifically was the one I read, and it changed or at least helped enforce the idea of there's really no givens, and you know, when it comes to work or hard work, but there is a statistical probability that the more you put in, the more likely you're going to get things out of it. And if you are on a daily and a routine basis, putting in effort and strategic effort. You can't just blindly be throwing stuff at the wall and hoping that you're, you know, lining up with the way that your skill set is. But if you're being honest about what you have to offer to the world and you're putting in that daily grind on a habitual basis, then there's a good chance that it'll pay off. So I kind of have a peace of mind knowing that when I'm doing that and when I'm doing something 6 days a week and staying true to it, that eventually it's going to go somewhere. It might not go where I expect it to, but it won't be the same a year from there. And then I'll be able to, you know, adapt to whatever that change ends up being. So that kind of allows me to kind of do that daily grind that, you know, where it seems like people think it's an overnight success or whatever. And you know, it's not, and it allows me to get through those years. I mean, really, it's been the last 3 years since college. It's been month to month financially, and just, it's a stressful place to exist. Mm-hmm. But once you start to get a little bit of momentum, it definitely helps give you some hope that'll change.
No, for sure. Let me ask you a question. That's unusual that you're young. How old are you? 24?
Maybe 26.
26. Okay. Well, happy birthday. So it's unusual that someone your age is reading books like The Compound Effect, let alone an artist. And I say that not to sound in any way disparaging, but kind of books aren't usually on the radar screen of artists, artists anyway. I'm curious what prompted you to, like, how did... Do you have someone who's like mentoring you, or did you get turned on to stuff like that by somebody else? Or
I'm trying to think. I think part of it is a personality thing. I think I don't relate well to the idea of because you're an artist, you have to kind of be this aloof, helpless person who's just making art in their basement and hoping that they get well known enough to make money before they die. That to me sounds, I just am not inspired by that idea, or by people who kind of sit in that space, because it just feels like not proactive and sometimes lazy, not always.
Let me tell you, just to cut you off, because you're right there.
What
you're talking about is hope. And I have this saying, and I've used this expression in like every sales letter I've ever written. Some form of it is like, hope is not a very good business strategy,
which is exactly
what you're talking about.
So I've never related well to that, especially since, you know, it's hard to say in high school what you're, you know, you don't know who you are, let alone what you relate to at that point necessarily. But as I've kind of grown up a little bit to the point where I am, I don't feel inspired by the idea of just hoping for a career. And so that's part of it. The other part, probably about 2014, I think it was kind of like you have different like growth spurts in your life, mentally and emotionally. And I went through a breakup that I'd kind of been just actually right, before, day two, my first EP, which is like a very heartbreak, kind of sad EP, which was documenting my breakup I went through. I kind of had this major learning experience relationally, because I learned, you know, how to not be dependent in a relationship, because, you know, just it's never a good combination. So I kind of had this codependent relationship from my side that I went through. It ended to my great distress, and it made the breakup even worse, because you're like relying on somebody, and then that person is not only not there as much as you want, and you're like kind of exaggerated worldview of codependence, but then they're completely gone. So you're kind of just left at rock bottom. And so I kind of hit the bottom in that sense as much as I could, you know, hit it, being in a, you know, I grew up in a very financially stable and kind of blessed environment, but as far as emotionally, I hit rock bottom. And so I was trying to figure out a way to climb back up. And my mind does have a tendency to wander around. If it's left to its own devices, it's kind of, I'm a thinker. So if I'm just sitting around, and I had a long drive out to that sort of noise internship, And so I was just listening to sad music all the time. And I was like, this is not productive. So I didn't need an hour a day of just like sitting in the car listening to, Noah Gunderson or something. So I decided to start listening to podcasts. And it was just it wasn't by no means at the beginning of podcasts, but it was at that beginning of the bubble starting to break out of it being like something that everybody started being like, oh, we should make a podcast. So
a more conventional media.
Yeah. So there was stuff up there, but it wasn't a lot of stuff curated specifically for podcasts. But you've probably heard of your Entrepreneur on Fire, that podcast. Have you heard of that one?
No, but I listened to some other ones. I'm at a different stage in my career, so I listen to more things like Side Hustle. Like I have all the nuts and I've been self. I'm a lot older than you probably think. I've been in working for myself for almost 20 years. Not that I don't like that information, but I'm just looking for different stuff at this.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But
a lot of stuff's geared towards beginners in that space. So, and that's exactly what I was. And so that one is just like a daily entrepreneur podcast, very, like positive vibed podcast. And so I kind of started listening to that because I could see how, like you were saying, when it comes to being a musician, that's inherently an entrepreneurial endeavor. And so, or at least if you want to not just be sitting around hoping for a gig. So, I started doing that, and that kind of started fueling the part of my brain that enjoys entrepreneurial ideas. And that's where I started really growing the idea of starting my first podcast. And so because of that, and then continued podcast listening, through all different types of podcasts, in that business space, I think that's been one of my biggest sources of information and books like The Compound Effect and that kind of thing. I'm sure that was from one of those podcasts that I heard it. And so I've just tried to be pretty intentional to keep those things in my brain, to keep myself learning and growing. And just so happened, I don't think I have to toot podcast horn too much since we're doing this for a podcast. So whoever's listening knows the value, but
preaches to the choir.
Yeah. I think 10 years down the line, if you have somebody who's a young professional, who's been reading and doing all the things that you need to do in order to be successful, but also who's been listening to, podcasts on a daily, every other day basis, you're going to have, and then you have somebody, speaking of the compound effect, who hasn't for 10 years, there's just going to be a very big difference in the way that both those people see the world and handle the world informationally and on a business standpoint. So I think it, part of me thinking about the things that I think about is a result of 3.5 years of pretty extensive attempts at learning.
I give you credit, man. That's really good. Congratulations. You're going to be much further ahead than your peer group because, I wish I had the foresight to do some of the things that I did later on at your age because it'll definitely, there's not just a slight difference, it's going to make a dramatic difference in a person A and person B.
Yeah.
Just a couple of things you said, just to touch on them. You'll find, at least it's been my experience anyway, unfortunately, for the most part, it's when you go through those crises that you do have a breakthrough because, you sort of need to get a reason to stop and think and reevaluate. And shit, when everything's wonderful and there's no problems and, man, life is just great, you just tend to not do that.
Yeah.
So you'll find that's a pretty normal thing. And it's that ability to stop and hit the brakes and say, okay. Like in your case, it sounds like you realize you had some bad codependency habits maybe that you're probably going to work on to make yourself healthier. But that wouldn't have happened if that relationship didn't go away,
No, it wouldn't have. It would have been sitting there dormant. And you don't really notice it until – because I'm a pretty independent guy. And so it's one of those things, though, you don't know who you are in a relationship until you're in a relationship. And then you kind of go through a whole bunch of self-learning from that. So – you don't learn until stuff falls apart musically, professionally, personally, spiritually or whatever it is. That message comes, I've heard that come up over and over again, of the idea of necessary suffering that kind of enables you to become more human, ironically.
Well, the other thing you said about struggling, I think I know I had this issue for sure. And it sounds like you had some of it, or you were smart enough not to have it. I tended to equate deservedness with struggling, like in my mind, okay, well, the more I struggle, the more I deserve something. But that is not reality at all.
Right.
The two are mutually exclusive unless you choose to make them tied together. And for many years I did, and it definitely was a block in the, like, man, I haven't suffered enough. And, you know, I got it, which is fucking ridiculous, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I think those are the kind of thoughts that, you know, you got to get hit over the head with an emotional brick to say, wait a minute. Or you got to read a book to say, you know, A and B are not equal to C. They have nothing to do with one another ever.
Yeah.
You know, so, and I think with musicians, I would imagine that that concept is probably, or any creative, you know, artists, musicians, I think that's probably even more prevalent as a mindset.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. I've heard the term suffering well, where the idea, and that's what I actually, fortunately, I have, you know, parents who are, well, they've been supportive in career and all that, but they also just who have emotional intelligence enough that, you know, in that specific instance at the end of that breakup, they were very just there for me as far as like, it's a sad time. So they're there just being sad with you emotionally. But then they were, all, you know, also gave me the roadmap of like, this is going to suck and it's going to suck for a while. And you'll kind of have two ways. You can either get through it and it'll make you worse and you'll have those nights where things suck and you just kind of lean into the, how much they suck and make bad choices that seem like they make sense just because things suck. And it'll take you that way. Or you can take it as a chance of it being really shitty, but you're going to learn from it and you can kind of lean into the shittiness and build upon it instead of like just scattering your world because of it. And I don't remember exactly how my dad said it when he said it, but it was concise, more concise, and it made total sense. And that was kind of my roadmap afterwards, was like, you know, 90% of the time I was using it as a constructive thing. You have, you know, 10% of the time where you probably make the wrong choice or whatever. And some nights you just eat an entire bag of chips because you feel like shit. But, you know, 90% of the time you're using it to grow and intentionally, like, you know, suffering well with it. So that advice right at the top gave me a roadmap to be able to see the end of the, you know, the tunnel, so to speak.
Very cool. Question, at what age? So you're 26. So I would imagine, and please tell me if I'm off, it's only been probably in the last year or so where you'd go back and say, hey, let me think about what my dad's got to say about this. Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I've always had, I'm trying to think with, I listened to my parents a lot growing, like I was a pretty obedient kid. So they've always had a pretty direct line, but I've definitely, it depends on the topic. And as I've become more of a quote unquote adult, there's certain topics where when they say things, I listen right away, and certain topics where I might be like, well, you know, the generational thing of like, well, sure, you don't know what I'm, but, that stuff is usually like based around technology or something, something trivial like that. And I grew up like in a pretty, you know, a pretty focused faith kind of environment. So I'm pretty familiar with like growing up in a certain environment and then accepting all of it and then kind of making my own journey through it. And so I'm pretty comfortable at this point listening to my parents for advice, but also being completely comfortable not agreeing with them, because that's just the natural trajectory on different aspects.
Sure. Yeah, I only asked that because I have three kids. My sons are 27 and 25, and it's only been like in the last, like after my older son turned 25 that, and we're really close and he'd always listen to me, but like he'd always talk to me, but he actually comes to me now and says, hey, Dad, I got a problem. How do I handle it? And I was like, you know, the first time he did it, I was like, yes.
Yeah, right.
I was like, yes, that's so fucking cool. I was really happy that he did that, because I was like, when is this going to happen? I just resistance. And it was like, he told me, he said something about, he goes, I used to hate it when you were little because you were always right and it pissed me off so much. I was like, okay.
Right, right.
Okay, I get it. Not a problem. But it was good that he came to me. I was just curious if that was a similar experience.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure. I'm probably still on that journey in some regards. Like I said, there's certain things where I hear it and take it immediately. As a kid, there's the natural resistance to just wanting to be like, oh, you don't know. Because you think that the experience you have with your parents is all the experience they've had because you've been, that's the only time you've been alive. So right. you hear sure. advice and you're like, well, we've been through the same things. How would you know? But, and you're like, well, no, they've lived a whole life before you came along. I think it's a natural kind of annoying thing that you have to just wait around and for people to stop being kids.
I hear that. Hey, so let's talk, you mentioned a couple of times you had a real good upbringing. What kind of childhood did you have? You grew up in New Hampshire, right?
Yeah. Grew up in New Hampshire. Both my parents, my dad was actually a pastor. So that was kind of where some of the faith stuff naturally came mm-hmm. in. And my mom is an OBGYN. So she is and has been that my entire life. I was actually born in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. We moved to New Hampshire by the time I was like two. So that's pretty much all my conscious memory. But it was great. I went to private school for up until high school when my town got like their first public school in that area. So I kind of had this very small, because of the faith related idea, it was like a faith connected private school. Mm. So it was a very, very small bubble that I grew up in and kind of like an outskirts bubble because it was in New Hampshire and it's a very different than like Nashville. Nashville, but the South, like, you know, like culturally you have out here, it's like churches on every corner.
Yeah.
In New Hampshire, it's like 99% of people just could give two shits about that. And
the Northeast is more like that. It's church is much less of a, the percentage of people that participate in church at the level they do in the South is different for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a different communal value. So growing up there, it was a great childhood. The faith side had its own nuances and like anything you grow up in, you kind of have to eventually push against some and, you realize that you were existing in a very small bubble that was different. And I knew it was a different bubble than the rest of the world because I wasn't like seeing the rest of the world. But once I went to public school, you start interacting outside of your small bubble, and that starts changing your worldview and expanding it, which I think is always a good thing. So
it sounds like you felt it was needed, and so it's good that you got it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm so glad I it was very difficult because, again, going back to just personality, my personality kind of was comfortable in I'd be in these tiny classes of like 20 people in my private school. And that was the entirety of the, you know, first grade or whatever. Mm. And so you have this tiny bubble by day three of classes, you know, everybody in the room and you're comfortable, and then, you know, it's easy to be yourself from there. Mm-hmm. And then by the time I was in fifth grade, like the school was, I think, even smaller. I had five people in my fifth grade class and they were all dudes. So my education in how to interact with women was missing for an entire year. And so coming out of that small bubble then into public school where like you have different people in each class and you're meeting new people every day was just not a skill set I had developed. Plus you interject some of the like just narratives of Christianity and how it sees the rest of the world at times. And it was a complicated integration from being, small bubble to big bubble. So it was by no means a smooth integration, but it was, like you were saying, a necessary suffering of expanding beyond my tiny worldview I had in my head. But on a more specific level, just of home life, it was a great like upbringing. I went to two brothers, one older, one younger. So I always had people to hang out with. We had neighbors next door that were our best friends. So it was just kind of like a very fun, relaxed upbringing. Started playing music when I was in about fifth grade. I started taking guitar lessons, and then that's when I formed, sixth grade was when I formed that band, the aforementioned band, with my neighbor. And then my brother didn't play drums, but we needed a drummer, so we hired him as a drummer, and he became a drummer from that point forth. And we all kind of learned our instruments together. By the middle of high school, we're actually playing like shows around the area and just kind of, you know, basic high school band stuff. But that was where I kind of started feeding my entrepreneurial side of me, because it was that feeling of like constantly growing something. And interestingly enough, I think that actually first came into my kind of DNA because my dad was a pastor and he had started the church when I was probably like three or four. And so my entire life, for most of up until I was like 14 or 15, I was watching something grow, and kind of like each year I affiliated passage of time with growth. So each year the church, you know, you'd have an Easter service that would be bigger each year, and we'd move from smaller building to bigger, to owning a building, to building a building, you know. And so I think that kind of helped ingrain, or at least awaken, the piece of me that enjoys growing.
Awareness that exists, that there's something.
It's a natural, like normalized it for sure. Mm-hmm. And so the band then was my personalized expression of that. And then once I got to school, and since school, I've found other ways as well to be doing it with my own music career. And then with, like we said, those other side hustles. So I started playing. A lot of my early music was playing in church, so the church sphere was great for you. You hear a lot of musicians come from that, and it's a great place. It's like a testing ground. That's at least mine was a very safe testing ground for me to work out. You know, was like to play in front of people and get better, and singing in front of people. All those kind of, all my firsts were, you know, on a church stage, whether it be singing or playing guitar or any of that. So that helped a ton, and that was paralleled then with my high school, you know, band that we had. And so high school was kind of just a great incubator of between church and that, of just kind of, you know, being a high school kid learning how to play music. I had a great family and around me that supported it and that I felt comfortable with.
When did you, like, so you're playing guitar in high school, you're playing electric or acoustic back then?
It would have been both. It was both, about half and a half.
When did you know at what point that you wanted to be a professional?
When it became to the band, we were just, you know, we were high schoolers in a band, so we were assuming we were going to be famous. And so in my brain, I was like already, you know, professional in that regard of wanting to be, you know, in that band.
You arrived.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. In my brain, I'm in my solo part of my career, in everyone else's brain, I just started being a musician. Yeah, so from that kind of, you know, naive point of view, I was like wanting to do it. But then once the band started kind of fizzling about my junior year of high school, I had to actually decide like how much of this was me loving doing music and how much of it was me loving all the pieces of the band and what that meant in my brain. And so I really went into like my senior year of high school looking at schools, and I was looking at Belmont, and it wasn't like I was like, oh, I definitely know I want to do this. But I was like, I think this makes sense. Of all the things I know I can do, this seems to be one of them, and it seems to be something that people resonate with around me. So I'm going to keep taking steps in that direction. And I went to this Belmont. I decided to do commercial music degree in guitar, and I had kind of teetered. I was like, I didn't know if I wanted to do voice or guitar as my primary focus, but I figured guitar would give me a better musical and theory basis than the vocal one would. So it really wasn't. And then you get to school and you're still like, you know, everyone's like, is this the right major? Is this what I want to do? Is there jobs through people who knew guitar, you know, like, what does it mean to do this professionally? And I knew I didn't want to be like a 70-year-old guy that I'd seen playing around New Hampshire at bars. That was like, I knew that wasn't
Note
what I wanted.
To self.
Right. And so for a while, I was like, I guess that's what it means. I mean, that's like literally all I saw of professional guitarists was that. So, and that was part of the reason I made the podcast that I made, was because I wanted other people to be able to know there was like a middle ground between Taylor Swift and 70-year-old, you know, bar guitarist with a mullet.
You could have a podcast on hairstyles and musicians.
You
can go off of there, man.
Yeah, right.
You want to talk about some of your podcasts?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
So the Middle Class Musician podcast was the one I started, and that one, like I said, was just initially was just a way to expose a piece of music industry that I was discovering from being in Nashville, but I had never really known existed growing up in New Hampshire. And that was just people making a living in music who most, you know, it could be people you know the name of, or it could be people who play for people you know the name of, or people you've never heard of and probably never would. But they're just making a living in music. And so, it allowed me to explore further as myself, like what are people doing, you know, in this space, and then have conversations with them and get to know them. But it also would be a way for people like my 14-year-old self who thought the only way to be professional was to be, you know, playing at bars until you're 90, in New Hampshire. And it allowed them to be able to see there's different ways to do it. And so it's kind of evolved a little bit. That's still like kind of the target space. And I think it's a great place for it, but it's a little bit more pointed towards, people like that 14-year-old self that wanted to learn, but also towards other professionals who are, professionals or amateurs who are currently like trying to understand what's going on and just hear from other people in the same space. And the tagline now is inspiring the intentional musician. So it's kind of goes back to what we were saying with the compound effect, and not like just hoping around for your next big break. It's like being a musician who kind of takes charge. And like we said, it doesn't guarantee that everything's going to go the way you want, but it does guarantee that you're being proactive and that things will go somewhere. And so, my personality has naturally gone that way. So naturally the podcast has kind of tilted that way a little bit.
Hold on one second. I would imagine that's also to some extent good lead gen for the talent side of Nashville for Hire.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. They kind of feed each other. So yeah. And it's been Nashville for Hire is still so new in the way that I'm, you know, at least in my life's trajectory. So, but they naturally, like, fortunately, all the things I'm doing, all the different fires I've got going, all tie together nicely. My artist stuff allows me to be speaking on the podcast with the authority of someone who's actually still, you know, I do freelance stuff too, but like long term, I'd like to mostly be doing my own artist stuff on the music side. So that allows me to continue speaking as someone who is actually, you know, in the music space. And so that kind of ties into the podcast, which the podcast also feeds back to my name and, you know, helps generate more leads to my music. And the music generates leads towards the podcast. The podcast leads right into the niche of people who would be interested in Nashville for Hire. Right. And then the talent side, I can pull people onto Middle Class Musician podcast who are great candidates to be on Nashville for Hire as selling musicians. And then selling musicians on Nashville for Hire are perfect candidates to be on the podcast. So it's a big little triangle that works out, quite nicely.
Yeah, very cool, man. So from a business standpoint, what are some things that might have surprised you either about the music business in particular or just about being an entrepreneur and running a business in general? And what have these things taught you about yourself, if anything?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think musically, It's been, I'm trying to think if there's been there. I can't think of any like major like moments of like, oh, I thought it was XYZ and then it was something else. I think because it's been such a natural progression. I've been very fortunate, like I said, to have parents that supported me. I got into, you know, music school. And then, you know, Belmont was really an incubator of like, I was not a professional musician when I moved to Nashville. I wouldn't have been able to, wouldn't have wanted to be trying to get work because it would have been like just a negative showing of my ability. And so naturally that grew from that. And then out of school, I had a few gigs that were keeping me afloat. And then as expenses grew, my income slowly grew as well, just like I said, to keep me at that month to month for the last 3 years. And so it's been such a step-by-step process. And because I had such a solid foundation from what my parents gave me, it allowed me to naturally grow. But I think, I guess business-wise, something that I've been learning recently and that's been, I guess, a surprise, and it ties into music, is just how big, especially this is, I guess, very pertinent to right now, how big the internet is and how much is out there. And in order to stand out, that, you know, you can't just create something you think is good or that is good and then put it out into the world and expect any kind of response, because it's just, it's amazing unless you get some luck, which doesn't seem to exist in the way that, like you said, overnight successes doesn't really seem to exist the more you dive into each of them.
Yeah. Luck is not a good business strategy either.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And unless that just happens, like when you create something and put it out there, most of the time it just sits there. And it might be the best thing in the world, but people, it's just a literal thing of people not seeing it or not being, you know, and not seeing it with the right buffer. And so one, learning just how busy the world is and how hard it is to actually get eyeballs on things, and then figuring out the idea of creating that buffer that I know just from my own experience, if I am shown something without a buffer that kind of gets me excited about it in some way that I am convinced and trust, then the odds of me giving that thing enough time to actually be able to appreciate it are way slimmer. So whether it's a song you're putting out or whether it's a website you want people to click through to from Facebook, it's really an adventure of figuring out how to get those eyeballs and then how to make them see it and trust the voice and be interested enough to click on it or to listen to it. And it's just, it's amazing. Like, for example, like I said, I've only had of increased traffic towards my music in the last 6 months or so. And before that, you know, it's sitting at like 200 plays a month on Spotify. And so the amount of people in my life that I've known, and I'm not like a huge, like, I'm not going to walk around all the time, like shoving myself down people's throats. So I've had my music up there for a long time, but I'm not like handing out my EPs at parties. So people who I've known for forever, but have never really checked out my music, because everybody does music here, who now might check it out because it's gotten a little bit of increased attention and are like, oh, this stuff's really good, like blah, blah, blah. And the music hasn't changed and it's been up there for 2 years, but just that buffer of, oh, I just, you know, I post that I just had a song on an ad on Instagram, and all of a sudden now when people are checking out the music, there's some authority behind it. And just that little bit of authority, it makes a world of a difference. And so it's the same way with business. And my personality naturally doesn't want to kind of buffer myself because it feels salesy, but there's a certain amount that's just required to be successful, I think, in anything. And so that's been a big lesson, that it's not my natural way to see the world, but I think it is a hugely important thing that I'm still just scratching the iceberg, tip of the iceberg, as far as how much I need to be kind of pushing those things myself and pushing beyond my natural personal tendencies.
Yeah, you got to remember, nothing gets bought unless it gets sold first, you know?
Right.
And you have a ton of latitude, and your sales approach, but it's got to be pitched by somebody or something in some way.
Yeah. Right.
It can be a nice organic way, or you could be up in someone's face, but there's a big spread between the two.
Yeah.
So
you still have to make the sale.
Yeah. It got to happen. Got to happen. Why folk music? What is it about folk music that made you gravitate towards it over other genres? I mean, you're in Nashville.
Right.
You're more of a folk guy than a country guy.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Which is, you know, pleasant surprise me. I talk to country guys all day.
But yeah, right.
What you know, what about that music? You know, is there different emotional feelings that it drew to you? Or?
Yeah, I think part of it, and like it's a growing thing. So I think the last few years, it's been, you know, my music has sat more or less in the folk area. And I think it ranges from being more folk pop to then I like to include kind of more of that spatial ambient sound as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so kind of, I think it'll eventually be more indie than it will be folk. But part of that's, you know, in my DNA at this point, but it really was, in a lot of ways, it was just following my ear. And like through when I was in college, you kind of had that mini folk resurgence of like Mumford and Sons, Lumineers, all that. And so that was my first introduction to folk music, really. And it was also my first, I mean, it's folk music, but it's, you know, modern folk. So it was different.
Yeah. It's not Peter, Paul and Mary.
Yeah, exactly. So I really, it just like my ear loved that stuff. I listened to it all the time. And so naturally I started kind of gravitating towards it in my writing. And I think it fit pretty naturally. It wasn't it didn't feel forced, especially as I did it more. And so now that's kind of just, almost like what I cut my teeth on. It's what kind of helped create the way I approach music. And so that folk side is pretty natural and easy to tap into. And I enjoy tapping into, like I said, some of the popular sides of what's out there currently. And then kind of also because of working with production more and more, I enjoy kind of producing a track. And I think that's what I like that about the I Know the Way Home song, is that it's very simplistic in its approach, but it also is, it's not just me and my guitar, and like the vocals have, you know, six layers at any given time or whatever. And it's folk, but it's got that,
it's haunting at times.
Yeah.
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 Which is good.
Yeah. And there's more, it wasn't just, me sitting down and recording guitar. And so my brain right now just enjoys the production side of things. So, the folk template, I think, is a cool place to start for a lot of that, and it's where I've been, and who knows where I'll go. But it's not something that I even grew up with, but I think also from just a lyric standpoint, folk music and singer songwriter music, which is a very broad term, especially now, but that kind of music lends itself to being able to say something lyrically. And so I enjoy having that journalistic approach to songwriting, and I found that more in folk and singer songwriter than in, you know, pop or some of the other stuff I was exposed to. So, I think that was probably one of the main things that keeps me in that space. I like kind of pushing the boundaries, cause I don't see myself staying in one style for the next, you know, for the rest of my life. It's just going to depend on where my ear goes and where I feel like I'm most naturally wanting to play.
You seem to have a pretty good ability to listen to your environment and let things evolve organically. And that doesn't also usually come at a young age. So hats off to you there, man.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
I was going to ask you if you're single or married, but I guess you're single.
I am single in the terms of the legal documents, but I've been in a relationship with my girlfriend for the last over a year and a half. So
good for you. So you rebounded.
Yeah. Yes.
Good
yes.
For you.
Fortunately, not a rebound that was fast. It was a couple years after, and I had a good patch of single, just purely single life and different relational things that I was able to learn from as well. But
good for you, man.
It's been a great relationship.
Well, good. I'm happy for you. Hopefully she's not codependent too, because if you have two codependents, I don't think it bodes well.
Oh, it's terrible. Yeah, I'm hypersensitive to it now, that because I did go through it and learn from it, then I went into this one being extra paranoid about anything that felt codependent. So, yeah. And the interesting thing with my personality, like I said, I'm very individual in the way that I kind of just go through my life. And so at the beginning, when I'm in a healthy relationship, I'm pretty independent in the way I do things. But, and that's how I was in the aforementioned relationship that ended up going sour. But once it became to that codependent side, I'm not at all like my natural personality, which makes it even worse, because then you don't even know, like, you don't feel like yourself, you don't act like yourself. And so all that to say is it's a much healthier relationship.
Well, codependency, as far as like as an observer, it's a very stressful thing, because you're taking on everybody's bullshit. And I don't know, man, I can't even handle my own bullshit. It's
right.
Let alone managing other people. It's like, oh.
Oh yeah. It's just a terrible place, and mentally and emotionally, it's just, yeah. It's totally shitty. Once you're out of it, you're like, I can't believe I was living in that way of seeing the world. But when you're in it, for whatever reason, you feel like it's the only way that you can exist. So,
well, good for you, man. You might come back a little bit, but as long as you get that awareness, I'm sure you'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, do you have any hobbies or interests outside of music?
Yeah, I've kind of got because I have so many fires burning, it's like I kind of see my work as like hobbies. I think I see it in the same way that a lot of people see hobbies, because mm-hmm. It's like I enjoy all these different side hustles. So in a way, those are like side hustles and hobbies. Yep. But I run pretty much every day. That was another habit that started after post breakup.
Good.
But now I do it just because it's good for you, and it helps clear my head and keep me just feeling better on a day-to-day basis. So I do that. I think my personality doesn't like to like be labeled as part of a group, which is just probably mostly egotistical. It's weird, because I don't naturally think of that as a hobby. I had to like think like, okay, hobbies. Because I don't think of myself as like a runner, or, because I do something, I don't think of myself as that something. but yes. So
Don't worry. This will get better in time, I promise.
Yeah, right, right. So I do that. I run. And then what else do? I listen to a lot of podcasts. That's kind of like a hobby in itself. The way I consume stuff that's like business, and then stuff that's more casual. Mm-hmm. And then because I grew up in that whole church environment, and then kind of ended up deconstructing pretty much everything I believed and came out on the other side, just kind of floating around, I listen to a lot of podcasts that are in a similar space of people who grew up in that small bubble that I talked about, but then are all like kind of outside of that bubble now, and like kind of wondering what the hell you do with your lives, because we all have like the same experience, but it's we don't fit in the group that we used to be in, but we also fit in.
You can't fit in the outside either. You know what?
Yeah, yeah.
There's a great book of. It's about that, but different context. It's a book called Limbo by a guy named Al Lubrano. And he wrote this book about he grew up as a middle class guy in Brooklyn. His dad, I think, was a bricklayer or something like that. And he became a professional. He became a journalist and a writer.
Yeah.
And it was the same thing. He was no longer a part of the blue collar world. Mm-hmm. But he could not find the place in this new world either, because it was an unsettling thing to – you're not from that world. It's like literally being – as you probably know in this context, it's like being from, a foreign country, and then you come here, and like everything you do is just not really understandable, or it's still uncomfortable. That was a great book. I really enjoyed that, man.
I would love to check that out, and I'm sure that would – completely translate, because it's like you've learned two languages, and because I live in the quote-unquote real world and in the mass culture, I'm very familiar and comfortable now just in normal culture, like I wasn't when I you know, switched high schools.
Sure.
But I also still have this entire language that I know from that subculture. And so I can kind of dip in and out of both. But you're kind of like, when I dip back into the old language, it's mostly just out of self-preservation, because if I come out and just say what I think, if I'm in like that in church environment, then I know exactly it's going to lead to all types of conversations that are not usually, you're usually not in a place where you can have a 3-hour conversation when you're talking about it. So, and people like, you know, people are naturally tribal. So people like to know who's in and out. And so you can
say, who's in the tribe.
Right, right. And so, but yeah, so all that to say, that's been kind of it's become kind of a hobby, because I had certain feelings and inclinations coming out of that space. But I couldn't articulate them as well as I wanted to. So it led to a lot of reading and a lot of podcasts and a lot of exploring, so I could kind of come to peace with what I grew up with. And then, like, instead of just throwing it all away out of, it wasn't out of rebellion. It was just out of curiosity and honestly seeking what it means to be a human. So, that's kind of been my, I guess, a hobby. I didn't see it as a hobby. You see it as kind of exploration at that point, because it's so tied to your narrative and your, the way you see yourself. So,
two more questions, and then I want to be respectful of your time. I think I know the answer, but maybe not. Who's had the biggest influence on your life?
Biggest influence on my life. You know, as far as just one, I mean, that's tough. I think I've had just a lot of different people. It's the interesting thing about podcasts and reading and all that is that you get influenced all the time by people who are way down the road from you, but it's so frequent that you don't even keep track. My parents obviously had huge impact, and they kind of gave me two different ways of seeing the world within the structure. My mom was a little bit more conservative and is a little more conservative. My dad kind of paralleled my journey and my way of seeing the spiritual side of things of life. And so as I was exploring and kind of questioning what I grew up with, ironically, as the pastor figure, he was also kind of like exploring it himself. And
him.
So, yeah. And he, I think what allowed for me to not just push back out of rebellion, but push back out of curiosity, was that when I'd come with questions, it wouldn't be, this is what we believe, and this is, you know, who we are as XYZ, and you either believe it or you don't, and you'll be shunned if you don't. It was like he'd be acknowledged that there were good questions. There'd be certain like party line or certain like stock answers. They'd be like, well, some people say it's this, this, and this when it comes to what you're asking about, but it's a great question. I don't have the definitive answer on it. So that space was hugely influential, because it allowed me to learn and not feel shamed by the fact that I couldn't just accept everything at face value.
I give your dad tremendous credit.
Yeah.
Maybe it was a lot easier, because maybe in fact he had some of the same questions, and he was sort of, you know, allowing to find out those answers through you.
Yeah, sure.
But in any case, I give him a ton of credit, because that is probably something that, you know, had someone forced him to have accountability for that, it may not have been a comfortable situation. Of course, it would have been unfair and so on and so forth. But
yeah,
that he supported you to go down that road is really, I mean, what a good guy, honestly.
Yeah. And I'm sure that was, it affected the community, because he was, you know, the school I went to, he wasn't a part of, but the church I went to was a community that was based around, you know, the things that he was, you know, teaching. So I'm sure that affected the community that I was around and made me even, it made it a healthier community to be a part of. There's a lot of people, especially because I've dove into all types of, you know, stories of people who grew up in a similar place, but a lot of people grew up in churches when they left, it was because of, like, you know, abusive relationships in the church or cultish behaviors that were t- toxic. And so fortunately, mine, like I said, was built out of my departure was out of, in my mind, curiosity and growth, not out of some terrible traumatic experience that I was like, I could obviously never be a part of this because of X, Y, Z. And so, yeah, and my parents, you know, laid that foundation and were, I'm super thankful that I was able to do it. Like I said, it was another place where I was able to naturally kind of progress instead of having to like hit a wall and like retreat from something because of having nowhere else to go. So yeah, that obviously they were hugely influential.
Well, I think when you're wandering emotionally, I think it makes a massive difference if you've got a support system there, because when you are wandering emotionally, you don't feel stable and you do feel like you're walking on a high wire without a net.
And yeah, totally.
Having that stability gives you that net, and it's like gives you permission to do this.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I've always had that. So it's when you learn of other people's experience who don't have that, whether it be financially, emotionally or whatever, it's an entirely different ballgame for those people. And for me, I've been fortunate to always have a financial undergirding and an emotional undergirding, where worst case scenario, it's like worst case scenario for me, if everything went to shit all in one day, I would be able to stay alive. And worse, you know, if I had to move home, that would be the ultimate like thing. That would be the worst thing that could happen. But that as a worst case scenario is like, would be cushier than my current living status. Cause I'd have, you know, free meals and a nicer bed. So it's like, I don't know what it's like to have, you know, my worst case scenario be homelessness or whatever it is. And that's a lot bigger risk.
One more question.
Yeah.
What are you looking forward to moving forward, either musically, professionally, or personally? You got a lot going on. You're a super intelligent and interesting guy. What makes you, you know, most curious or most excited if you look forward?
Yeah. I think there's a lot at the moment, which is great. I've got, like I said, because of having that ad, it's gonna in the music industry, money comes slow even once you make it. So once that money comes in that I've gotten from the ad, that gives me a little bit of a cushion. I'm gonna be able to be a little more flexible, and instead of doing most of my day to day right now is freelance work, whether it be from home doing like remote session work for people, or whether it be playing guitar for people on the road from time to time. So what I'm excited about is being able to pull back a little bit from the freelance side, which is a little bit more time for money exchange, and be able to pour into my artist stuff, Nashville for Hire, bringing that into fruition more so, and then the podcast. And so because of having a cushion for the first time in 3 years since I've been out of school, I'm going to be able to actually, you know, put the time that those things deserve. It's still going to be a lot of things going on because those are all pretty busy endeavors within themselves. But so I'm very excited for that on a professional level. Like we were saying, on a personal level, being in a healthy relationship and moving forward with that is exciting, and just it's another layer of emotional security where you feel like you're able to kind of like take more chances because you've got that kind of cushion around you emotionally. It's not just you against the world, and so that's been a great place to be working from instead of the way it felt when I was single. Yeah, I'm excited really just to be like to continue hustling on all those my three main fronts professionally, and to have a little more financial ability to do that. And I'm hoping then that each of them will be able to gain momentum more so because of the amount of time I'll be able to put in. So I'm just excited for a little bit of a boost that the last 6 months have been, and I'm excited to be able to put that right back into it.
for whatever it's worth, man, I would say with 100% certainty, if you're back on this show in 2 years, you will have made dramatic changes in more than one of these areas. So,
well, I appreciate that.
Take that with a grain of salt, but I think that's a pretty confident saying that. And I would say nothing if I didn't think it. I'm not that guy. So you're going to be totally fine, man. Hey, listen, I cannot thank you enough for your time. This is a real pleasure. You're very interesting. I enjoyed learning about you. Is there anything you'd like to promote? Let people know where to find you and what the URLs of the stuff you're involved
with. So artist-wise, if you just type in Andrew Galecki, andrewgalecki.com is my website. Spotify, all the digital distributors, anything, find my music there, check it out. As far as the podcast goes, you can check out Middle Class Musician. That's my main one we've talked about. There's also another one called Musician Builds a Business, and that one parallels on a documentary side the journey of creating Nashville for Hire. Nashvilleforhire.com is where you can go, where we've talked about, and hire out Nashville musicians and producers and basically any music professionals from Nashville that are put on the website, a curated roster of them, so you know the quality of the people you're hiring, and you can hire them out for remote session work. So basically you send them songs you're working on, they do it from their home studios or their local studios, send you back the files, saves you a trip to Nashville, and gets you high quality work for your music aspirations. And so that's nashvilleforhire.com. You can just check that out there or on Facebook or Instagram. Those are, I think, are all the main points that
you,
I would
forgot plug. To do one thing.
What did I forget?
Spell your last name.
Oh, right. Galecki is Polish, and it's weird. It's spelled G-A-L-U-C-K-I. It's like Happy Go Lucky, except with an A instead of an O. So if that helps you remember it.
Andrew, G-A-L-U-C-K-I. Look him up online. Hey, man. I really appreciate your time. This was great. You're a super interesting cat. And I will have you back in here in a couple of years because I want to see the fortress of solitude you will have built for yourself at that point in time. Thanks for listening, everybody. I hope you enjoyed this interview. I want to say thanks again so much to Andrew Galecki for spending this time with us. I really do appreciate it. And everybody go to Everyone Loves Guitar and everyonelovesguitar.com and sign up to get notified about future episodes, along with some other cool new things we'll be doing for guitar players. Now be nice, go play your guitar and have some fun. Till next time, I'm out, everybody. Peace. We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.